most of them are localized, ready-made games from outside. So that gives us an advantage in the market that there are very, very, very few talented game designers that know the Arabic culture and from that from the region, not from outside to study the region, and actually can make a very good games. That's, I think, the gap we are
seeing. So basically, if you want to build a game for Japan and you don't understand the culture,
even if you read about Japan, you still can't do a game
for Japan. It's very hard. Even like, again, as I said.
Next level. Next level on the ABXY podcast with Ziad. We have Hazem Hanbali and Brahim Al Hassan from Madhawk Studios. In this episode, we'll learn more about Madhawk, how they scaled their studio from zero to over 80 million downloads on mobile, and how they expanded their portfolio from mobile to console. Hazem, Brahim, thank you for being part of the ABXY podcast with Ziad. I'm really happy to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ziad. Thank you. First, for those who are watching us that don't know Madhawk, could you please tell me more about the journey? How did you start Madhawk? Why did you start it? When did you start it?
So basically, we started Madhawk in 2018. Before Madhawk, we used to work on a game development to a publisher, Tomatum Games. I was there for around 4 years, and that's where I met Ibrahim. I was creative director there, and Ibrahim was a game developer. After that, Ibrahim left Tomatum because he was interested in creating more games, and Tomatum wanted to focus more on publishing. So after a while, I also left Tomatum and decided to start my own studio. So I contacted Ibrahim and told him, if you are available, I'm thinking of creating a game development studio. Are you in? He had a couple of offers at that time, and he decided, no, okay, let's do it. So that's how we started. We started working from my home at the basement. It was funny, crazy days. That's it.
It was back in 2018.
Water flooding is not fun anymore.
Yeah, the basement used to flood in the winter, A little. It was a decent basement. It was like a cozy office.
Actually, he renovated just before we started in the basement, so it will look like much nicer now, maybe.
It actually makes a better story. It looks like the
sound. Classic, like cheesy.
It's not a garage, it's like a cool basement. But it was far from his home, so he used to be angry every day when he came to work.
Exactly.
And so you were a creative director at Tomatum.
Yes.
And now you're the CEO of Madhawk.
Exactly.
Brahim?
I was a game developer at Tomatum, and I switched to a bit of game design at that time. And when I left now, I'm at Madhawk. I'm as a CTO and co-founder at Madhawk.
Okay.
So basically, the basic dynamic when we started is that I create the art, he develops the game.
Also, Hazem is good at creating art assets, which is coming handy in the first.
Because originally, I'm like a 3D artist.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Okay. I remember the first time I met you guys, it was back in 2018, I think, when my studio was 3-4 months old, and we met during the Pocket Gamer Jordan. It wasn't Pocket Gamer, it was the Jordan Game Summit.
Yeah.
It was in the Business Park,
maybe? Yeah, it was in the Business Park.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I think also it was at the museum.
The tanks.
Tanks museum.
Or maybe the one before that. I can't actually remember.
I think the one in 2018 was actually in the museum. The one after that was in the business park, or it's the same event. I'm not sure.
Same event, but the first edition it happened.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
I don't remember where it was, but I met you there and we learned about the
studio. Before Pocket Gamer sponsored, right?
Yeah,
gaming stuff. Oh, yeah.
There was a very funny story that
day. Yeah.
So I don't know if you remember, but there was like a round table and lots of big publishers there. Voodoo was there.
Yeah.
And Voodoo was like number one hyper casual game publisher. So during the round table, one of like the big publishers. He said,
No. Before that, I was contributing with some questions and so forth. And out of nowhere, this Voodoo guy came out and said, I would like, before he say anything, I would like to congratulate Madhawk for, we were Madbox at that time. We'd like to congratulate Madbox Games. Keep.
So the company was called Madbox. So he just stood up and said, "I want to congratulate Madbox for reaching number one or number
in the
two.
US.
Top in the three US, game in the number US. One,
we were like 2 months old. So in the US,
one of my friends was sitting on the other side. Said to me, "You reached number two in the US." I was like, "Did he say US or KSA?" So after the round table, the same guy came to us and told us, "I came here just to talk to you," and we were very excited. And what's happening? And while we were going down like the stairs, everyone was
just smile and wave. Just smile and wave, boys.
And when we sat with him, he took his phone and opened a game, and it was supposed to be our game. And he showed us a game for another studio,
which is Madbox.
Madbox as well. So, and we were like, "Oh, this is not our game. This is our game."
But we should thank you for getting Voodoo to the region.
Yeah, exactly.
Because wasn't prepared
he
for,
told us he came just to meet us.
Yeah, to meet us.
And because of that edition where Voodoo came, we actually started with Hyper Casual as well as a studio.
Yeah.
And I think many studios started.
Yeah, thanks to our fake game.
But what we had to do after that is to change the company.
But it's funny story.
Yeah.
It's actually Madbox Games, the one that reached the number one in the US, started also in 2018. So when we did our research of the name and so forth and so on,
we couldn't find
anybody. So basically, Madbox Games and Madbox Games are founded in 2018.
Yeah,
the other one is in Germany, I think.
France.
And they used to do hyper casual games as well.
Yeah, that time. So, yeah. They could have met them in France, actually. Would
have. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that makes sense.
Funny story. Yeah.
Cool. So, you started Madbox. By the way, where are you guys from? Where is your team based?
So basically, we're from Jordan, and all of our team is based here in Jordan, Amman.
Cool. How big is your team?
I think we are around now almost 30 members at Madbox. We are based in Amman, Jordan, just like Hazem said. Most of the team, I think, from here, from Jordan. And we expanded the team gradually, like maybe we were two of us, obviously. Yeah, yeah. I mean, so Hazem, and we grew it to 5 people, then 10, 15, and so on.
From hyper casual?
Basically,
between casual, mid-core to hyper-casual, it depends. Yeah.
So the hyper-casual era, it was like between 2019 to 2021.
Yeah.
But before that and after that, it's like casual to mid-core games.
Then Apple dropped the ball.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, be sure you are private for the rest.
Yeah.
Interesting. What would you say was the catalyst? You told me you grew, you organically grew the company. So you started two and then you became five and then you became... How did you fund this process? What was the catalyst, the game that actually got you to expand the team at the time now or maybe like during the past 6-7 years?
So basically when we started, we took like the experience we had in other companies, which is that we understand the region and what the region needs. And we have an idea how to market our games. So we decided to like do games as fast as possible. So we did our first game in like 2 weeks and our second game, which was the chess, in like 1 month. It was Ramadan. It was very hard. And our third game was Highway Drifter. It took us about 2 months. So the main focus was to create good games as fast as possible. After that, we did some small marketing campaigns with micro influencers, let's say. And back then it was way cheaper than these days. Yeah. And our games reached the top ranks in all over the MENA region. And we started generating revenue like in the third month.
Actually, I would like to add to this. It's a funny thing that we found out the third game was localized to, let's say, the MENA regions.
Yeah, I wanted to ask.
Market. The funny thing, one of them reached number two in Japan.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
Same game reached like top 10 in the US.
Yeah, exactly.
Which one?
Which is the Chess.
Chess and Highway Drifter, I think. I think Germany.
Japan.
Oh, yeah, maybe, yeah.
Still generating revenue like from Europe as well.
Yeah, which was interesting case study for us.
Yeah. I remember the Chess, it was a nice... it's still operating, right?
Yeah, still generating.
The Chess, yeah, but Highway till today, It's one of the major
our biggest game.
Yeah,
still
Heavy Drifter from 2018 till now.
Yeah, so nice. Over like 35 million downloads on it.
35 million.
Yeah,
interesting. And Amir is from that game, right?
No, Amir is from the chess.
Ah, okay.
So later on, or let's say after 3-4 years, we met the Chess Hit and Run. So we took Amir, which is our character. I think.
Actually, I missed which game has 35 million downloads.
Highway Drifter.
Highway Drifter. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The one with the drifting and all of that. But the chess, yeah, Amir originally from the chess.
Yeah. So nice. Basically, we built another like bigger game using the same character, but now it's like third person game, and it has like
you do missions.
Environment,
and,
yeah.
35 million downloads on one game from the MENA region.
Actually, in some like years, it had a huge organic growth on Android, and it started generating like 40,000 to 50,000 downloads daily.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think organic on Android is insane if you do it right. Mm. So like free marketing and very good.
And you were doing it for the MENA region. So an Arabic game.
Yeah. Our target was like MENA region first, but we did like user acquisition campaigns in the US as test. And which any game that works like in the US, we start testing it in other countries. Yeah.
Nice.
But I think Highway is translated to 4 languages, Arabic, English, German.
Actually around 15 languages.
No, that's the chase.
That is.
Yeah, Highway Drifter, it's 4 languages, German, Japan, English and Arabic.
We have like a huge traction on it from Brazil, for example.
Yeah. On Android.
Both. Yeah.
How did you get there? Like what does it take? Because we rarely hear about studios in the region that actually achieved millions of downloads self-publishing. I think you guys are among the very few that were able to self-publish. Yeah. What does it take to self-publish from the MENA region? Like how did it happen for you? I know you guys had some organic downloads, but I mean user acquisition is not an easy job, especially if you're reaching markets outside of the region. Mm. How did you guys manage this? How did you start doing that?
So basically we start with the game itself. We build a good game and a game that is built for a target audience, which is in our case the MENA region, or mainly in Saudi Arabia. After that, we do like user acquisition tests with multiple videos and start trying other countries and see which countries that we can get like low CPI and a good retention from.
Mm.
So basically, each game is a test. But the idea is like you need to build good game mechanics first, good graphics that will attract like organic downloads and stuff like that. And then you'll start testing and experimenting with marketing.
And you need to be lucky.
The idea is if you do like 10 good games with the same concept, with the same mechanics, doesn't mean all of them will work. One of them might work, none of them might fail.
So we're talking about marketability or retention or like what's
everything.
The
you need to check all the boxes.
I mean if the 10 games are the same.
Mm-hmm. So basically you do your game design in order to reach like good retention. You do your good user acquisition.
It's an iterative process.
Yeah. And there is like your place in the market, in the store itself, how the store will treat your application.
Yeah.
So that's a combination of like retention, how many active users you got.
Rating, crash rate, and,
The current state of the market at that time. So it depends. As he said, part of it is luck. And user reviews is very important.
And the user expectation.
Yeah.
For example, if we release maybe Highway, not in 2018, we release it now. It's not guaranteed that it will perform just like when it's released in 2018 because user expectation evolves over time. For example, like so many games have better graphics. So in order to compete with these games, you need to step up the graphics so the user won't judge it because the graphics, because other games just do it. A lot of factors, I think.
You mentioned Voodoo.
Yeah.
Did you actually work with any publisher or like was your...
Yes, we worked with a couple of hyper-casual games publishers. Mm-hmm. We signed a couple of deals. They even gave us some MGs. And in we had like two deals with two different publishers. both of them didn't go through because we didn't reach like the desired KPIs after a certain stage. So we had like the early good retention, but after that we had lower KPIs. So they thought, you know, we can take this game, but we know we can't scale it like over 10 million yeah. downloads. So we ended up self-publishing these games. One of them also reached like top 10 in the US and generated lots of revenue, which is Rooftop Run.
Rooftop Run.
Yeah.
So that was, so the deals with the publishers, it was, the deals were before or after the Chase and the Highway Drifter?
After.
Why did you choose to go with the publisher after being able to self-publish?
So the main reason is we met, like, they contacted us.
Okay.
And they told us that, yeah, we can spend lots of money in user acquisition and we can help you, like, grow the game. And so we decided, why not? Let's test and see how what they will put on the table. And the main reason is we want to learn from them.
Yeah.
So we do self-publishing, but still we're like a startup and we need to learn from these guys, like the tricks on user acquisition and how to get better attention and stuff like that.
And the game that they rejected, or they felt that was not publishable, that reached the top 10, the Rooftop Runner, right?
Yeah.
It reached top 10 after we published it.
Yeah, so technically you
thank
had
God.
A better U18.
Yeah, it got rejected.
Technically, maybe. Maybe you had at that time.
Did they get back to you to tell you to take back the game?
We kept working with them on other games, and we did like multiple tests, and then we decided to stop working with
them. I think it depends on the scale of the company. For example, if you say about Voodoo, I think their acceptable benchmarks are higher because they have plenty of games in the pipeline, and they need that specific game that could scale to up to 10 million. In our example, for the indie studio, just like us at that time, I think 10 million is way higher than the expectation.
Yeah.
So basically, it works for us at that stage, but it won't work for Voodoo. But it doesn't mean that Voodoo couldn't scale it, but they couldn't scale it given their market size, I believe. So basically, lessons learned from this is the publisher is good, you learn from it, but they don't have always to be like, you compare yourself to them, and like, for example, if they reject a game, okay, and you self-publish it, you may still have a chance.
Yeah.
Because it makes a big difference in your market size compared to, for example, that company.
Yeah. Also, you can afford 2-3 million downloads. Like the revenues from 2-3 million downloads, they cannot. They have
significant.
Yeah, exactly.
Just an R&D for them.
But you told me that they reached out because they had the UA budget, the marketing budget, and they can scale your game to 10 million plus. Where did you guys manage to get the budget to scale those games?
So basically, when we started the company, I had like some savings. So basically, I had some stocks in the other company. And when I left the company, I sold my stocks. So I had like enough cash for 1 year.
Okay.
Actually, and like for me personally. So I took part of this cash and to found the company. So basically, when we released our first three games, they started generating revenue organically. Plus, we did, as I said, a small campaign with small influencers. After that, we went and paid user acquisition, and we grew our budgets gradually. So we get the money, we increase the budget, and we create another game, and that's it.
It's worth mentioning that Mandrake is bootstrapped.
Yeah, this is the nice part.
Yeah, I think I'm not quite sure if it's a good move, but I think we were excited. Me and Hazem already we can make a game from scratch. So I think we are blessed with that talent. That helped us, but in the gaming business, that won't cut it alone. So you need maybe you need an investors. Maybe it depends on the situation of the company and the founders if they have that knowledge.
Which brings me to the question, why did you guys, or have you guys raised any funding yet?
Zero.
No.
Why is it like?
Even the money I invested, I took it back.
Okay, so the company.
it was the agreement from day one.
Why did you guys not raise any funding? As well, was it a personal
So basically, decision? This discussion, we make it every year. So the argument is, okay, we need to get money to buy time. But the idea is, it's like
takes time to raise.
No, basically it takes time to raise. So in order to raise, let's say 1 million, you need a year, for example. But you can create a couple of games and generate 1 million from your own revenue. So it's a question of
focus. Don't giving up on equity.
Yeah. So where do you want to focus? Create more better games or just run after investors?
Yeah.
I think also it raised the question that the investment you need to use, where are you going to spend it? Obviously, majority of studios, they choose to spend on new user acquisition and digital marketing. In our case, we believe that if you want to raise an investment, we need to validate that game before. And some games can't handle large budgets. For example, if you are doing like ads-based game.
Yeah.
So basically, your best bet if you are doing ads-based game, not in-app purchase games, to scale the amount of games rather than to scale the game itself using large, heavy budgets. So at some point, you will reach a break point where you are losing money rather than, let's say, for example, the UA budgets are expensive more than the game LTV or the game return on investment. So in ads games based business model, I think you need to be careful in terms of spending the budget, and scaling the game itself is also tricky. If you like, let's, for example, like a big publisher, they scale the game, the good game, they scale it like to 100 million.
Yeah, this is the question.
Downloads. So if you do that, the game is burnt, but you took what you want from the game. But if you scale like a game like Highway Drifter to 35 million, for example, over 5 years, you are generating revenue in a healthy way, for example, for an indie studio, not a big company.
Yeah.
And you are not exhausting all the resources and the campaigns you do for that game in order to get the cheaper clicks.
Mm.
So basically, raising an investment is a bit tricky.
Yeah, and the other idea is that we have enough money to do user acquisition. As he said, if you pour more money on the game, you will end up losing money instead of being profitable.
Yeah, at some point, yeah.
And that's, it depends on the game, yeah.
And the other thing is that, you know, a woman takes like 9 months to make a baby, but you can bring like 9 women and make it in 1 month.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same.
Some people can do it.
So basically, if it's like you know, we're not like a restaurant that we have like one branch and it's working, so we open other 10 branches and other places and the tool work.
By the way,
each game needs like its own design. You need to grow it alone, and you need to work on it, and it needs time and it needs focus from like the core design team, which is mainly me and Brahim and other like top management in the company. So more money won't like speed up the process in our case.
If your games and the team is not mature enough to handle big budgets. So yeah, but it depends on the experience and the stage of maturity of the team and the games that you have.
But it doesn't mean that one day we might like need bigger budgets, and if we
have exactly.
A good, very good game that we know that we can scale and the bottleneck is money, at that point, we will raise. Another thing interesting, which is most of our games, like LTV, comes within like 2 weeks.
Mm.
So and when we work with like Google or Meta or other companies, they give you line credit. So you can spend an UA and you will pay by the end of the month. And the revenue will come within a couple of months.
Yeah.
So you won't have like a cash problem.
Yeah. Interesting, but before we go into the credit line thing, how are the big publishers scaling their games to 100 million and not losing money?
So basically, they are losing money because they are testing lots of games until one game out of 100 game is a big hit, which is very low CPI, high LTV.
Yeah.
So basically, we can't do 100 game and test them and put budgets on each game.
Yeah, of course.
But they can, and actually they don't. The other developers develop their game and they test it.
But it depends, by the way, when getting 100 million in 2018, 2019 is different than getting 100 million now.
Yeah, of course.
For example, in 2018, 2019, there are no, privacy issues, tracking issues. So therefore, it would be much cheaper. I think there is like middle spot. If you get below that, you will get profits. If in the middle, you will lose money. And there is that ceiling that you need to push in order to get crazy revenue because of the organic, because like you are reserved top one spot in the chart.
Yeah, so you get more organic.
Exactly. But I think it's also different between 5 years ago and now.
Yeah.
Getting 100 million now for a hyper casual, I think definitely they will lose money in that single game.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
And probably part of that 100 million is mainly organic. So they spend a lot of money, yet it's doing very
like
well. 40%
from them are paid only. Yeah, 60, yeah, other 60 definitely organic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm happy you mentioned the that hyper casual today is not possible. It's not possible to scale hyper casual game today to 100 million. How did you guys adapt your strategy from the hyper casual days till today? You told me there's a game that's 4 or 5 years old, the 35 million game, the Highway
Life Monster. Yeah.
How did you guys manage to keep this game alive throughout the market change?
So basically, it's not a hyper casual game. That's
it started as
our first game more in type.
It's like casual to mid core, and it mainly depends. Okay, mainly depends on ads and revenue, but still it has some in-app purchase, but it's not built like hyper-casual games.
Mm.
That's one thing. And we started with these type of games, which worked well. And when we shifted to hyper-casual games, it worked for like a couple of years very good. But when the hyper-casual games went down, we already have these games, and we built another games. And we have like another Highway Drifter, which is...
UHD.
UHD.
Ultra Highway Drifter.
Yeah. Ultimate Highway Drifter.
It's like a TV name, but...
I mean, it's another drifting game, and it's also generating revenue. So the shift was easy because this is what we did before the hyper-casual game.
Yeah. And because it was not a hyper-casual anyway, it was a mid-core. So you monetize through ads and in-app purchases at the same time.
And another like thing that we can do is... Me and Brahim mainly, we are like console players. We play on console. We prefer console games, so we try to like bring the console experience to mobile. But you have like the controller limitations and stuff like that.
No,
but apparently it works. And if you see like the big games now in the stores, like Fortnite or PUBG, for example, basically it's a PC game or console game that was
with the compatible control.
So apparently, what we did was working and still working.
Nice.
Yeah.
So then you started with the idea of bringing the console experience to mobile.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, more or less. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But it got inspired from console games. To bring it to the mobile. Actually, it brought our attention that when Fortnite, PUBG. Get boomed on the App Store. We were like, how the player is able to play this game even though it's a complex controller?
Yeah.
Complex control on mobile. Apparently, they did. So basically, maybe that's what I'm talking about user expectation. So I think users are willing to play complex games, the complex controller on their phone, mobile phones.
Yeah.
So that opened up a new ways of developing a new game, better experiences for the player and to enjoy in their mobile phones.
Yeah. So, after PUBG and Fortnite launched, you got to the realization that users are open to playing more complex games.
So, basically,
on mobile.
Our games were a bit, like, had intuitive controls, but a bit complex. But when we saw this, this opened like a new way of thinking that, you know what, we can add more buttons.
It doesn't have to be only hyper casual with simple control.
Or even like mobile casual games. You can find like racing games on mobile that you need only to shift gears, for example.
Yeah.
And it worked well, and it was working well. But now the user expectation is, you know what, I want full control. I want like manual gear shifting on a racing game. Yeah. So user expectation, as Ibrahim said, is like scaling, and you need to adapt.
I'm trying to remember all of your games. They're all based on racing and cars, right?
Majority.
We have like Rooftop Run is like.
Oh yeah, right.
So we have a shooting game, shooter game.
Yeah.
We have a couple of games, multiplayer games, PvP, and so on. But our majority of games are racing and.
So what would you say your strong point is as Madhook?
So basically,
I think the game design.
Yeah.
Part of it. The agility in the game design, I believe.
And we understand our region. So for example, Amr Hit and Run is an open. Let's see, you can.
Semi-open world with the...
Simplified GTA, let's say. But he's a delivery guy, so he can deliver stuff, deliver people, and he buy houses, he buy cars, and you can jump from the car and walk around and do like lots of crazy stuff. But the overall character is like he's a Saudi character, and he's a goofy, funny character, and so that's what working.
So understanding the region or understanding the culture in the region is one of your strong points.
Not the culture, more like what these users want in the game. So it's not about only culture, it's about like a specific mechanic.
I think the gap we are filling in Madoc is there are no games that built from scratch for the region. Most of them are localized, ready-made games from outside. So that gives us an advantage in the market that there are very, very, very few talented game designers that know the Arabic culture and from the region, not from outside to study the region, and actually can make a very good games. That's, I think, the gap we are seeing.
So basically, if you want to build a game for Japan and you don't understand the culture.
Even if you read about Japan, you still can't do a game for Japan.
It's very hard. Even like, again, as I said, the mechanics. For example, Highway Drifter, if you look at it from like, from a Western perspective, you see a drifting game.
Yeah.
But basically, it's not drifting.
The details are what makes it
highway drifting.
The physics of the game is terrible to that.
You are driving like a sedan. It's not a drifting car. And you're going at high speeds and losing control, which is way different than like professional drifting.
So, interesting.
Yeah. So the concept is totally different.
I always wondered if games that are catered to the region Where still are something interesting, but I never actually thought that you guys focused on that specifically, because now I think you guys are breaking a cycle for the studios in the region, be it in Jordan or in the region, that you guys are actually now targeting self-publishing, targeting outside of the region.
So basically, we play it safe when we do a game for the region, but we always think about other regions when we build the game.
We make room for...
We want it like... not to be just for this region, that we try to build a game that can work in other regions as well. And we do like many experiments, like we built games that are not for the region. Again, as I said, Rooftop Run is not localized game. It's a parkour game, and it worked in many regions.
But it started as hyper casual.
One of the years, the majority of our traffic was in the US, or 2 years.
But.
It wasn't in the region.
For the Arabic, not Arabic, for the...
All of our games.
Yeah.
Like, we one of the years, so like, I think...
2020 and 21, I think.
Most of our revenue was from the US.
Even though some of the games are localized for the region, like just I said before, but it worked well in the US market, and we reached like the top charts in the US many times. I can't remember how many times.
In multiple games.
Racing, category overall, and all of that.
Very interesting, to be honest. I rarely talk to people from the region, students from the region that have had successes in the region, let alone outside of the region. What does it take to replicate the Madhook experience in the region, not only in Jordan, like in the
everyday fight with the Hazm, settling in the ring, the decision making, apparently.
So basically, it's all about the talent. If you find like the right team and you invest in it, and I believe it has to be from the region. For example, if you look at Egypt, you will find like multiple very talented studios that are very good at game development, but they don't have like enough investments and cash to do proper user acquisition, for example. So if you find these talented people and invest in them and help them, bring them like consultants in user acquisition, for example, in game design, since they understand the region better than like hiring people from outside the region to create games for the region, you will have another model.
So mostly investment and expertise.
I think it's tough in the region to find the right expertise for especially game development, whether it's art, programming.
You can find like raw expertise, but you need to invest.
But we've had successes before. I mean, from my experience as well, I know we've had the hit game as well. We have the development expertise, we have the game design expertise, and then the art. But And we have like, there are other studios as well in the region that have done this. You mentioned Egypt, you mentioned investment, and you mentioned direction or expertise from outside of the region. Why do you think that the Maddock experience was unique as opposed to the other experiences? Because we've had successes.
So basically, it's part of it is experience. So I've been working in the game industry since 2009. And I worked on like web games and then mobile games. And I built a lot of experience working with Tomatum as developing games or as a publisher. So I have like the know-how.
Yeah.
But most of like the new studios or startups, they don't have the know-how. And me and Ibrahim as founders, as Dynamic, we like understand every aspect of the business. So we know how to develop a game. We know how to design a game. We know how to create art. And we understand the business itself. How to, at the early days, I did the marketing myself. Yeah. So I even understand how to do marketing. I'm not an expert, but I know how it works.
Yeah, it's jack of all trades.
But you should be like an expert in one area, but you need to have
understand
everything. So one of the main things is that I worked for multiple companies before founding Maddock. Which is this is
the experience that you're talking about.
And this mistake that many people do is, which is they finish like university and they do a couple of games and they say okay, well, I want to start my own company. And they don't, you can teach like knowledge, but you can't give experience.
Yeah, it's time.
It's this time.
You know? Also, one of the things I think we are good at, that we know where the market is going. For example, if you look at the big players in the market, does that necessarily to be related to the games? Like, for example, Apple or Google, how they shift their vision for the App Store, for Google Play Store. If you play that bet on where is the market going, for example, like the privacy thing and the ads industry got hit and the user acquisition.
New hyper-casual games will go down.
Yeah, exactly.
In a couple of years, hyper casual game.
Because
we should be prepared.
If you know where Apple or Google, for example, Apple, because the biggest player in the market, if you know how they tick, like they said, or what they want from that app store, they know they hate ads.
What's in it for them?
Exactly. If you know and you work backwards, you can have a hint where the market is going. So you place your bets right because. With the limited resources, for example, you are not a big company, AAA, that you have a big R&D department. You don't have that. So you need to place your bets right.
Exactly.
In order to survive, which is, that's what I'm talking about the agility of the team and the business side of the company.
Yeah.
For example, a lot of big talents in the region, by the way, even talents more than we are, I believe, but they lack a bit of business perspective on how to make or monetize from the game. Rather than just develop the A game, the innovative game, it's good, but I think you need both of them in order to make a business out of it rather than just a product.
I'm happy we're talking about this because one of my questions that I usually ask is, what would you tell the people that are watching from out of the region, be like, let them be publishers or investors, where would you say we are at this on the scale of successful of becoming a successful gaming hub? What do we still lack? What are we good at? So I think you touched on one of those, which is we have a good talent, but we lack some like the, I don't want to say nuances of expertise, but some kind of expertise that can take us to the next level, not from one experience, but different experience.
Different aspects. Yeah. I think that's, like, for example, it has many reasons that somehow the MENA region is behind other regions in the gaming industry, even though there is a lot of gaming community in the region.
Yeah. And talent, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think one of them is the business perspective and the awareness of the gaming industry and how it is one of the best entertainment industries to be in order to get talents, to produce a game, to get a spotlight for it. To obviously, ultimately, to generate more revenue. So I think it's more like awareness, business perspective, investments, and all of that. But I think the region, I think the outside of the region, they don't believe somehow in the talent that they can cut it in the gaming industry for the region. So they won't invest more money in the region, only a few. So I think we need one big success in the region, whether it's a company or a game.
We had a couple of successes and a couple of big exits.
But it's not
a huge exit.
Yeah, a huge exit.
It's a good, huge exit, but it's not a game-specific exit.
We're talking about Jawaker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jawaker is a very, very, very big company.
How much did they exit for?
209, 205 million.
205.
$205 million.
But it's a cards game.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. But I think we need that game-specific, like, for example, for consoles.
More IP, mostly.
Yeah. It's a more like game, not, for example, cards game, board game, are really great. And stuff, by the way, Jawaker, it wasn't easy to be there. But I think we need a big, good exit that highlight that this region have a talent that actually can cut it and dominate in the region, whether it's mobile, console, or PC.
But also Babel had an exit, and they had IP games, right? Not card games.
But it was, I think, publisher they were.
Basically they owned
the IP. They got the IP.
The game, but they didn't develop them.
Yeah.
But they scaled the game, and they added features and stuff.
So they published for other studios?
Basically, they work with
they
developers.
They IPs.
Yeah, okay.
Mm.
They owned the IPs and localized it, but it wasn't, like, developed from scratch in the
engine. But they do publishing,
which is good. But I believe it's a different business. But I think the region that need the classical, like for example, gaming talents or game development talents, we need a big exit or, for example, a good story to tell.
What's stopping us from getting there?
Many, many things. Like, you need to find, like, world investors. That's one thing. So we have, like, lots of investors that are interested in gaming, but when they always stop because, you know, it's head driven business.
Yeah,
same
issue.
Yeah, so you need to have more world investments, and I think we need to have collaboration on country levels. The countries need to kind of collaborate in order to do, like, proper knowledge exchange. Basically, what we are seeing, like, now in multiple countries that are investing in gaming is that the first thing they do, they bring talents from like Europe, from the US, which is very, very expensive. I understand they have, like, longer experience. But what I would do is first invest in the current talents, the local talents
and studios.
We have and studios, then bring these, like, expertise to train them. You know, one of the things that helped us, like, elevate in Mad Hog is we went to Google IGA in 2019, which is the Google Indie Game Accelerator.
Oh, okay.
We spent around a week with experts from the industry. 1 week, but it was, like, intensive.
Where was that?
In Singapore.
Oh,
Google HQ.
The things that we learned there, when we applied them, our revenue, like, was like 4x within, like, a couple of months.
Yeah.
So we have the technical expertise, we have the knowledge, but we need, like, this extra knowledge, and we have the understanding of the market that we are in. So basically, I think we need to have belief in local tenants first.
But we have all been reading about investments in the gaming space, mostly in the GCC countries.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say about, they are already investing in local talent. So, for example, in Saudi, they have accelerators that are investing in local talents.
Mm-hmm.
In the UAE, we have some gaming initiatives, mostly in Abu Dhabi and Dubai. Where would you put that on the talent exchange level?
So basically, I believe they are doing a good job, but it's still early. So
Needs time.
Saudi Arabia announced that they will start investing in gaming like in
3 years ago.
Still too early. But what I like about Saudi Arabia is they are a bit fast. So they pour money in order to get things going.
Shortcut.
But still, I believe many mean like, maybe on a governmental level, maybe, but they don't still understand how like the gaming business properly. So choosing where the money goes might be a bit tricky, where to put it or put it at the right place. And one of the things that you can find it in each country, in the MENA region, is like the confusion between game development and esports.
Yeah.
So like they are totally different industries, but most of like the events that we are seeing, they put them in the same event.
No, as we speak, there's the esports World Cup happening now in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, which is, I understand that like people who are coming to watch esports are interested in playing the games that our local developers are playing, which is good for exposure. But when you put a strategy, these are like two totally different industries.
Also, I would like to add to that is I think outside MENA, they are looking to the MENA as more like games consumers rather than developers. Yeah. For example, if you look at PlayStation stores, app stores, and all of that, all of them have the support like for Saudi, United Arab Emirates, and all of that. Jordan wasn't one of them. And also, they host a lot of esports events, which is brings more money, but they don't make a good spotlight on the game development part. Which they, I think that needs time to be changed. Or
yeah, they look at the region as a consuming region, not a producing.
Consumer for the gaming product rather than creating it.
Yeah. Yes. PlayStation, for example, or Xbox, or any other like big company that they are not. I don't think they are doing enough.
There's no attention.
Attention. Yeah. Proper attention in order to empower these local developers.
Yeah.
And even when you reach out to them, it's like they're a very big company and there's like compliance team. And yeah, you can't imagine how hard it was for us to get like the PlayStation development kit.
Okay, so okay.
I think just one last thing. I think Jawaker was outstanding and they nailed it. For example, Babel also nailed it as well. But you need that success in like the full journey where it's, first of all, it's developed from scratch, localized games, SATA card game or board games. In order for these publishers and the gaming console or PC or mobile hardcore gaming to look at the region as creators rather than consumers for the gaming product.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, like, when you have a $200 million acquisition and a almost $20 million acquisition in the region, I mean, it gets the attention of people from out of the region.
Definitely.
What's stopping them today from, or why are they not here yet? I mean, the attention, why are they not paying enough attention to the region as a development hub, I would say. One more question is, we've talked about Jawaker, we've talked about Babel,
yeah.
And now you guys. Why, in your opinion, is Jordan better in game development than the other regions, other countries in the region?
A lot of things, actually.
Social. Many factors. So basically, if you look at, let's say, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, these countries, we've been always stronger in labor. Let's say. So and our engineers always go to Saudi Arabia, to the Emirates, to GCC, to work there. Even like you mentioned Jordan, I'll mention Lebanon, for example. Each time we talk to a big company like Unity or Google, the content person is Lebanese. So we are like talented people, but we are forced like to work in order to generate revenue, in order to live. So
don't wake up.
Yeah,
you're not gonna generate revenue.
So it's a hunger game from day one.
Yeah. So we're not countries
that
have like sources of income like oil, for example. So we need to work, and I believe we are smart people are in these areas.
It's interesting,
but in Jordan specific, I think it's
the motive that difference because.
Between Jordan and the other countries?
Yeah, I think in Jordan, you will genuinely see a very passionate, talented people for the gaming development industry rather than, you know what, I'm hearing that the gaming business have a lot of money.
So yeah, business tourism.
Exactly. So I think We are in Jordan. I think we are proactive in the gaming industry or game development industry. Other like other countries, like they are reactive to it. So when the gaming industry boomed, like for example in 2020 in COVID, it got all of the attention, including in the MENA region, one of the big countries in the MENA region. However, Jordan was like since 2001. You will see people like they want to work in the industry. They develop themselves and they learn new talents in the gaming industry and so on.
Yeah,
and maybe
one of the reasons
we started early.
I have my own view, by the way.
We started early in Jordan, and the tech scene before gaming was strong already in Jordan.
Mm.
And we have one of the strongest tech scenes, I believe, in the region. So from tech, gaming started, and maybe because you had a couple of people that were interested in gaming and decided to create gaming company.
Mm.
And we started earlier than other regions.
Yeah.
And when I went to the last Game Connect in UAE and Dubai, Pocket Gamer, I met a couple of indie Saudi developers. They have like amazing passion.
Yeah.
The games that they are creating and fun. I know they don't have the business aspect, but the games they are creating
they are solid games.
Very, very good games. Well designed.
Yeah,
basic enough. Art. So they just started after us. That's but at a later stage you will see.
Eventually they will.
Eventually you will see something amazing.
Yeah, I do believe that as well.
Yeah,
but you know what's the strong point between Jordan or the strong common point between Jordan and and KSA? You both are designing games for the region, and I think this is what made Jordan different from other countries.
Yeah,
because I know you know there's talent in Lebanon and Egypt and Syria, but the thing that made a difference is that the Jordanian community caters games for the region, mostly for Saudi Arabia. And this is the same thing we're seeing in Saudi Arabia. If you take a look at the games that you've seen at the Dubai the games were actually in Arabic with localized, hyper-localized.
Yeah.
Not localized, actually. They're made for the region. They're not localized.
Yeah.
They're made for the region and in Arabic, which this is where I saw the value. This is the value that I saw in the Saudi
By the way, that's interesting because it gives us edge over people outside the
region,
because they will never know how to develop a game for the region.
Yeah, they will acquire mostly or localize, but it will be organic from the region.
100%, yeah.
Interesting. So now that we've talked about the differences in the region between like Jordan and the other countries, what makes it different? What would you say are the lessons that we should be learning from other regions that are successful in the games industry, like gaming hubs? Mostly, I would say maybe Turkey, Finland, Europe, or like you know the
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think first,
what can we learn from
what
as a region?
We want to mention is that our government focused on the tech on the tech industry.
And gaming,
it's part of the.
They include it in the tech part, whether it's gaming or
and
other tech industry.
Here in Jordan, we started that like earlier than other countries.
So we took a head start.
And now they are following, and maybe they will go become even bigger than us. One, I'm proud of this. That's one thing. The other thing is, you were saying,
what can we learn from? From Turkey, for example. Turkey became
two exits and they are good to go. they had very big success in the gaming industry.
What can we learn from Turkey? What can we learn from Finland?
The first thing is things needs to be faster in terms of like investments. So if companies are looking for investments and like have even small traction, I think investors should like be more bold and faster in investing in these
and open
companies.
To the idea.
Yeah,
that's
one thing. And as I said, because it's a head-driven business, they are always afraid. But you know, it's a head-driven business. You need to invest more and like do way faster and more iterative testing.
Yeah,
until you.
I think to lose more cash.
I think. One of the things that you should learn from outside the region for the gaming business is that I think the issue is the missing point is that gaming businesses are convincing investors that they don't know anything about gaming industry to invest in the industry for this.
There's some educating to do.
Exactly. So I believe we should have more gaming investors that they understand the industry. They understand that this is a head-driven business.
Mm.
It's not like any other business. And they understand where is the, let's say, elevation point for each studio that they want to invest in. For example, if I'm looking for an investor, for example, I don't look for only money. Okay, I look for a consultant as well in the gaming industry.
Yeah,
how to elevate the team, how to elevate the gaming business. The most important thing is they understand the gaming industry.
Mm.
They understand that there is a quick shift in the market. For example, just like I said, if we released Highway like 5 years ago, it works.
Yeah.
If we release now, it won't. So this point should be understood, well understood by gaming investor that understand this market, understand they need to act fast. For example, if they saw an opportunity or an opening, they don't need like long overdue due diligence for like a year. If they do it like this,
industry.
For example, the hyper casual, it appeared in a year and it vanished within less than a year. So basically, you need a good understanding from the investor perspective of the gaming industry.
Yeah, we had a couple of investors that contact us.
I wanted to ask if you were...
We didn't raise, as I said, and we were... So far, we're not interested in raising, but many investors approached us because we are doing well.
As a business, not as a gaming company, by the way.
And each one of them always like start the conversation, I don't know anything about gaming.
Yeah.
Okay. But we are interested to invest because we are interested in gaming. So that's a problem with like investors, VCs and stuff. They should like do their job and learn about, let's say, gaming business, or maybe bring expertise and learn from them in order to understand how this works and invest more in game.
Yeah.
That's also, to be fair, for the company or the investor. For example, the investor, they need to understand where they are putting their money in.
Yeah. Did you raise investments?
We raised 5-6 years ago.
And how was it?
It was from a non-gaming entity and the gaming investors, I mean, I would say at the time it was during my very early days. So I learned a lot about business, but not about gaming itself.
Mm-hmm.
I would wish today to have gaming investors on board in my company.
Yeah, it's like a jackpot. If your investor is have a good understanding of the gaming industries, that would be good.
They would help you scale, yeah.
And by the way, I'm happy you touched on this, because if you take a look at the Turkish ecosystem or the Turkish gaming market and the Finnish one, there is a lot of gaming VCs or gaming-focused VCs, which makes sense.
Yeah. And it's most of them are like founded by gaming experts.
Yeah. This also brings us to the question of...
That's us after 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully.
We need time. We need time to do this. But we've been
hopefully
doing this for a while. We've been doing this in the region. Like I know from, like, let's say from Lebanon, for example, it's been more than 14, 15 years that people have been working in the industry.
Yeah.
You're telling me from 2001, it's almost... Nine. I mean the
gaming industry. It's like 2001 or two now.
We're almost at a threshold where we can start, where people from the industry can actually start investing in companies.
Yeah, I think
are very close. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I think after COVID, all tech have like a boost, a huge boost in their market. But post COVID, it slightly declined, okay, but I think if you have a good game and a good strategy on how to go to market, I think you will eventually get there.
Mm.
But you need a good guidance.
Get there. What do you mean by get there? Like get funding from gaming investors?
Both. If you are looking for a funding, definitely you will need. Eventually, you will get there to get a good fund if you have a good product or a good business. Or sometimes I believe the investor, they invest in not in the business, but in the founder.
Of course.
Basically, because it has more credibility if you have a long experience in the market. Rather than you have a very good product, but maybe the founder with the lack of experience could ruin it. So basically, I believe most of the investments, not in the gaming, not necessarily in the gaming in general, I think they... Most of the product and the majority of their decision, like 60-70%, I'm not an investor, but I think they think this way. that they invest in the founder or their career or their...
Of course, in the early stages,
yeah,
definitely they look for the
exactly. team. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Another thing I think, since we are talking about investors, is that unfortunately, they all follow trends.
Yep.
So back then, they had like 3D printing for a while, then blockchain, then now AI.
Do you know this meme with the broom, like three of that? Let's go to get the 3D print.
Yeah, yeah.
The next day, let's go to get the AI.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go get Bitcoin.
So basically, they see where the hype is and they pour money in it. And like 2 years later, we spend money and we got nothing.
Yeah.
So it's better if they understand what's happening. That's they should like do proper technical due diligence before investing. And another thing is that before you had like to solve a problem in order to raise an investment. When it comes to games, it's entertaining.
Yeah,
there is no question.
Yeah, exactly.
We are not solving any problem. We are entertaining people. Currently, they are making
tech. They are asking about
tech. No. It's the other way around. They have like, we have AI, we have a solution that we will create a problem for it.
Yeah, you start creating problems for the solution that you're creating.
Definitely. Doesn't make sense.
Technically, what we're doing is we're offering an opportunity. We're not solving a problem. For investors, I mean.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
It's a trend based, just like Hazem said. They keep asking us these questions, not just for the investor or any event. What the problem you are solving, what the issue you are solving. Guys, we don't solve anything. We just let people vent in our games. So they just like, what's the word? I mean, in Arabic, it's حافظين مش فاهمين.
Yeah.
They are like, just, what's the trend outside? What does LinkedIn say? It's like this and this. And so basically, they treat each start of the interview for investment or showcasing or incubation. They ask the same questions over and over again without even considering if that question is valid in their industries.
Yeah. We're a followers market anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
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 It's very few, I think, investors in the region know how.
I'm happy now.
There has been a development. Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
There is some attention. There's some interest in gaming. Yeah. This is why we're doing this, to shed light on what's actually happening on the ground in the region for people that are watching us from outside of the region.
Another observation is that we saw like big investors from GCC in general. Okay.
Yeah.
And what they did is like they decided, you know what, we want to create gaming companies, and there are like multiple like indie studios all around the region that are just sitting there waiting for money to grow.
Yeah.
So instead of like bringing people from outside and founding a new company, start with what you have, acquire a couple of like small studios and grow them, then bring the experts.
Yeah.
Their latest acquisitions were insane.
Yeah.
I mean, did you do your research in the region?
I know.
It's insane. Some of it are justified, but the majority of it, honestly, it's not the right way, because you have very talented people, and as we said before, there is a gap in the region that there are a few talents in Egypt, in Jordan, Lebanon, and in different countries in the MENA that they know how to make a game from scratch, and they understand, and they are from that region to do that game, because there is a big gap in that, and they didn't even look at it. So you brought an outside, like for example, gaming company, you acquired those people. They applied their massive expertise on irrelevant market audience. So I think there should be an education in the middle of there.
Another thing is that they want to go big. So they...
Fast. They don't believe in MVPs.
They want to create like the next maybe AAA game.
Next Call of Duty.
And this is the first game of that studio.
It doesn't
studio.
Work this way.
Yeah, of course.
Like, to take the steps, the proper steps in order to reach where...
By the way, that's funny because some of the people that they want, like for example, they go to a studio, they want to develop a game for them as a client.
Yeah.
They are miseducated to a limit where I need to make a GTA like in 5 months for like 20K on mobile or an Apple
TV. This is what we face also.
Now guys,
we have a development arm in the
game. There is a huge gap between the people are getting into industries because it has a good return.
Yeah.
and the people are creating the game in that industry.
Yeah, because there's a mix-up between consumers and producers in the region.
Yeah, definitely.
The gaming space.
Back to trends. So basically, you were talking to one of to an investor who was very interested in us, and they are Indian investors with like lots of money. And during the conversation, we mentioned that we want to go into consoles and PlayStation because we love to create games for consoles. And they were
not only that. It's a good business as well because there is a gap in that.
Their point of view was, no, the future is for mobile. The console will die, the PC will die, stuff like that. So this is where we decided, we will never move forward with these guys because
we're not
on one business. Yeah, right.
Of course.
And what we did is we published our first game and our second game on PlayStation. And now our game, Highway Drifter and Agile Simulator, is like the top 10 best-selling racing game in Saudi Arabia on PlayStation. And we are generating good revenue from it, and we are growing it step by step. There's like huge opportunity there that no one is like seeing. And we are just, we should follow the trends. Mobile is the future.
If you had taken the path with the other investors, you wouldn't be where we are today.
Also, on the other hand, I could argue, I think based on numbers, for the last few years, mobile has better revenue in gaming industry than console and PC.
Yeah,
but that they don't know that they have a lot of high competition.
Super.
So basically, exactly. So it's for a larger scale. Like for example, when we said about publishing a game for a marketplace that's huge, that won't cut it. But for an industry that's like almost an exit for them, if you do that calculations on the same situation that we have here with the console and our fellow Indians investors, you will see that it also applies because they seeing a big, huge market share, which is correct. I understand their point of view, but in our in Madhook, let's say,
knowing what you know,
exactly, because it is vital to know what's your next move and to play the market where it's going.
Yeah.
One of them is PlayStation, for example.
I'm interested to know which games were published on the PlayStation. And this is interesting because it is maybe the only opportunity I would have to in the region to compare publishing on mobile versus publishing on console. Mm. What are the pros and cons of each one? And which one is relatively... I'm not sure if there's any... If any is easier, but I'm happy to learn.
So in our case, our mobile games are free. And we monetize from us. On PlayStation, they are paid games. On mobile, what you do is you publish your game and you spend user acquisition and you acquire users and generate revenue. On PlayStation, it's the same, but the game is paid. So the user has to pay in order to try the game.
Yeah.
On mobile, it's way easier. It's free. It's free game.
But acquisition is easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But regardless, people are like getting our game organically from the store. That's one. We, frankly, we didn't do like huge marketing campaigns. We did the small influencer campaign.
You're talking about PlayStation.
Yeah, on PlayStation. And it boosted our sales. But still, it's like early days for us. It's still we are experimenting.
How long have you been publishing on PlayStation?
Maybe
less than
6 months.
Months. Okay. Less than 9 months,
But what we found is that when we created the right game for the right audience, people are buying it. It's that simple.
Yeah, I think
which games.
Basically, when we started 2018, we had like the Chase, and then Highway Drifter, right? And when we went to PlayStation, we had another version of the Chase for Steam on PC.
Better controls, better quality for Steam.
And we took it and we put it on PlayStation and we started making sales. And then we decided, you know what? Let's do things faster. Our best game is Highway Drifter Mobile. Let's like do a high definition version of it and put it on.
But we did it from scratch.
We ended it up.
But why was it on Steam in the first place?
It was a test. Because we couldn't get the PlayStation dev kit back then. Then we decided to know we need to like do a high definition version.
No.
We love PlayStation. PlayStation, but
no, we need dev kits in the region.
Yeah, we need.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, currently, unfortunately, they don't ship.
This is why.
Anyway,
the MENA region, Also, they have a lot of restrictions rather than Apple and Google. For example, if you say the publishing thing, the first thing you need a developer account on one of these services.
You cannot have it from the region.
Exactly. So to create a developer account with PlayStation or partner account, you need first of all to register an official company with the government. Second thing, you need static IP. Third thing is to provide them with an extensive documents of financials, and depends on where you want to release the game. For example, in the US or the Europe or the Far East, each one requests a different types of documents.
Which all makes sense, but not for an indie, small indie.
Yeah, exactly.
In the region, in the MENA region.
Exactly. So if you want to start today to create for a PlayStation, you'll end up like 5 months just trying to get the dev kits, disk kits, creating accounts, registering the papers. And also, by the way, PlayStation, they verified us as a company by contacting the Ministry of... which one?
Labor?
Not labor. I think one of the government entities, they physically contacted, Sony contacted these to verify us as a company. So it's a long process. But once you do it, you're good to go. I mean, you can publish as much as you want games.
Can you have a dev kit without going through the whole process?
No way.
If you are in the region, no, because you need at least...
If you're outside of the region.
Yeah, if you are outside the region, yeah, they ship to Europe and US and...
Without to be having an entity.
No. You need to create a company.
So it's a process for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, the restrictions here is the logistics only, which is where they need to send you the dev kits and the test kits.
By the way, same case with all other consoles.
Consoles.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nintendo, Xbox. Yeah. It's the same thing. They don't ship to the MENA region. You need at least a company presence or a presence for your company outside the region, like, for example, UK, Europe, US, in order to get the dev kits.
Yeah, it's an obstacle.
It's a big obstacle, actually. Yeah. We took us, I think, a year to solve this problem.
Yeah. On top of
the orders. Yeah, exactly. But I think it's worth it.
Yeah, of course.
The top charts, it's worth it.
The PlayStation thing is a very tricky business, because if you don't know how to make a really good game, their users will roast you over.
Once you
lose this reputation on console and PC as a studio, there is no going back, or it will cost triple. The damage is
unless,
unlike mobile, at the end of the day, the game is free.
Yeah.
If I don't like it, I don't like it. Okay. But there, you need to pay upfront to play the game for the premium or paid business model.
Yeah.
So you need to be careful what to do and what games to the standards. Like I mentioned before, the user expectation of the game, because like it or not, they will compare it to AAA games.
Yeah.
Because the user don't know indie or AAA, most of the users. So if you like released open world hit and run game, like the mobile version, exactly, they'll compare it to GTA and roast
different. Yeah.
So they won't understand the difference.
Yeah. But you told me you guys reached the top chart in Saudi Arabia on PlayStation. What were the other games
in the racing?
In the racing category.
Yeah.
What were the other games not from the region? There's only one game from the region, and it's from Jordan as well, and the rest are from us.
How did these guys get the dev kit and verify?
Basically, they went through what we went through, but I think their game is older, and back then it was easier in the dev kits. After COVID,
Interesting.
I'd like to mention we are the first studio to launch Arabic game on PS5.
Nice. But how would you compare publishing on mobile versus on PlayStation? Like on mobile, we know it's done through the digital social media channels. You acquire users, customer acquisition, the CAC versus LTV. How does it work in the premium console world?
I think.
Basically, you need to build hype around the game.
Before,
a community.
Yeah. As I said, our game is like getting organic users, because, you know, the description of the game, the screenshots, the overall concept is localized for the regions, and they are looking for such
games. Yeah.
That's why
there's a gap in the market.
Yeah, exactly. They are buying it. But the proper way to do it is like to make big hype about the game, and maybe you work with the like gaming influencers, streamers, and stuff like that, which will cost a lot, by the way.
Yeah.
But like traditional user acquisition that we use for mobile, it's not that effective. And
for PlayStation, of course.
Yeah. Because you
cannot measure.
You are on your mobile and you are scrolling. Have you ever seen an ad for like a PlayStation game or on? Rarely.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's more friction to
yeah. And I think it's more likely to convert to actually pay for a game upfront when your friend recommended the game. Like, for mm-hmm. example, the influencer influenced that game is good. But if you saw an ad of it and you pressed and they say, like, we need $25.
Yeah.
Definitely, I won't get it because they have no credibility. So I think some of it have a barrier like this. So if you want, like, for example, if you saw an ad or a recommendation to a product from your friend or influencer you admire or anyone that have influence on you, you will most likely consider to buying it.
Yeah.
But if you saw it like an ad, generic ad, especially it's a business, paid business model or paid game, it's very tough and less conversion rates than recommended from a friend.
Yeah, do you think for this specific case on PlayStation, do you think working with a publisher would be better for a studio from the region that is looking to publish on or to develop for the console for PlayStation or Xbox?
If you have like
maybe PC, if we're talking
about. If you have like a strong publisher, even a global publisher, strong publisher, and you could work with, I think at an early stage, or for a studio that just published the first game, I think it would be a good idea because they will learn how to publish games. So far, we are doing okay with self-publishing on PlayStation. So we didn't test with publishers, so I can't really answer the question. But I believe if you don't have the know-how, it would be like smarter to go with a publisher.
Also, I think it's more like an investment to learn from the publisher how it's done. Because our case with when we published the game with Voodoo, I think the majority of our
it's published or you tested with Voodoo?
No, on mobile we
published it to.
It was published on their account for a while. And they,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's not we're scaled globally. But I think what we did good is we learned a lot from Voodoo. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. If you were to start a studio today, what would you focus on?
I would not start this studio.
That's what I always say, but having your experience today with mobile, with console, with the region in general, with, I wouldn't want to say it's lack of funding, but lack of smart funding. What would you do? How would you start? Because if people that are watching us today,
the same way
MVPs.
We, the same way we started before.
MVPs.
Our first focus was to generate revenue fast.
So profitability first.
Yes.
To sustain, like we don't need to make that your biggest game.
Yeah.
You need to create a medium games, mediocre games, that's okay. If you are generating more revenue, that's good. Once you reach a point where you have enough cash to invest in more quality of the game, and your game, your dream game, that's good. Yeah, do it. But at first, don't do any ambitious projects because a lot of studios go bankruptcy because they did like, we want to create the dream game. Like the A game, which is bad at first because you are beating the clock. So basically,
and don't be like very innovative. Don't bring this idea that no one did before because it might not work. And don't like purely copy. Maybe find middle ground. Yeah. And
by the
and
way, do something that's interesting. We are at Madhawk learned at some point if your game is very very unique.
Yeah.
Okay. In order to make it work, you need two things, or one thing. You need to have a big reputation and a big budget to convince the user that this is a unique game that's actually good. If you are exactly. For example, if you are introducing a new mechanics, for example, you know what? The arrows left and right is bad design. We want to invent this new tech, okay? It's good. It's innovative. If you did it and you are a small to medium size of company and you launch it, the user won't get it and they won't invest their time to learn. But if you are like, for example, one of the biggest developer or publisher in the market, they did that, the user are willing to invest. Yeah, for example, if you do that, they introduce a new mechanics, the user will have the time because they trust this game is a good game and they will invest more time learning it. So one of the things like just Hazem said, don't make a very innovative game because we tried it in Madhawk and failed miserably.
Yeah.
We introduce a new things and get failing over again. However, if we introduce in other games we have that have a lot of traction, the users somehow believe in it, so they invest their time to learn this new mechanic or this new innovative mechanic. So basically, see where the trend is going for the time being. do a good game, not a very bad game, do a good game, but not a fantastic game, for example, yeah, that you invest a lot of it, and do always an MVPs.
And at the early stage, it's
MVPs is vital for this.
Very important to learn like this full cycle.
Mm. Yeah,
make a game in 1 month, 2 weeks, publish it, do some user acquisition, open all your accounts, make sure everything is working properly. Some people like work for a year and a half on a game
before having an account.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I like what you guys have, like what you just said. What's one thing you know today that you didn't know when you started and you wish you had known? Something super interesting for someone that's watching us today that's looking to start a gaming studio, maybe for PC, console, or a mobile. What's one piece of advice, or the most important piece of advice that you think they should know today?
So, actually, okay, focus one from Hazem and Ibrahim.
Okay.
First of all, focus more on iOS.
It's, okay,
it has better revenue as a start, then go to Android, where will you get one more organist. Ad monetization is not only Google Ads. There are multiple ad networks that you can use and in order to generate more revenue. User experience is very important. You need to create like good user experience, and when you do a game, copy the user experience from a good game.
Yeah,
don't be innovative in
because they already did the research. And yeah.
App store optimization is very, very important. Do proper app store optimization, proper screenshots, proper icon. That's all very important. What are things that we learned, like the hard way?
What's the first thing that came to your mind, Brian?
I think I just mentioned it in another question, which is don't make a very new innovative way, new innovative mechanics, or introduce new things to the market. And most importantly, I want to revisit this again, that understand where the market is going, because if you develop a game like for 4 to 5 months or a year, for example, if maybe you start a company with a big budget that you can afford to make a game for a year and it went to shit. if you understand the market where it's going, okay, and you place your bets on that, okay, most likely it will be very rewarding. Because if you start a gaming company and you see the market that the ads is good and some grossing game, maybe you'll see that the grossing game that rely most importantly on in-app purchase is more valuable. Yeah, you are right, but good luck competing in that.
Yeah. Also, this game, if it's grossing today, it's been maybe 2 years in the works.
Yeah, 2 years in soft launch.
Yeah.
Even in soft launch, like some of the games, like they soft launch it for 2 years and they A-B test every single element of the game.
Yeah,
so they can optimize it.
Very important thing is always look at the data. Always have some kind of analysis in your
head. Yeah, definitely.
And know when to pull the plug on the project.
Yep. Exactly.
Some people,
this is a hard thing to
Emotionally attached to the project and they keep investing, but it's the dead project from day one.
I think this is one of the toughest thing in the creative, any creative industry, that people...
Exactly.
Which is okay, by the way, because that's how we work.
Yeah.
But at some point, you need to be ruthless and pulling the plug for some game or some projects in the team.
No.
Also, please, always, if you want to start a studio now, like finding the right co-founder with you is one of the best things. It's like even important.
I can't believe how
giving each other credits. Because sometimes me and Hazem will go into the ring like we need to kill each other. Okay. But the next day we understand this, why this happened.
Yeah.
Because a lot of big studios, not just in gaming, by the way, a lot of big, let's say, for example, great startups, okay, almost broke because of a bad partnership.
Yeah.
Because it can make your life easier, it can make your life hell. Exactly. This is one of the important things.
And it's always better to have a co-founder.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
That dynamic, you can't have it by yourself.
Too much. If you can, there's a ceiling to
it. Yeah, exactly. But it would be much easier if you have a co-founder.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, definitely.
Interesting. And if people from outside of the region are watching us, I would say maybe investors, maybe publishers, maybe investors or VCs that are looking to raise from the region to invest in the region, or even developers. What would you tell them to focus on in the region? Because we've seen people coming to events, trying to understand what's happening here. What would you tell them to focus on?
Basically, maybe the talent.
Yeah.
Look for the
give talent. More credit to the
talent. Yeah, yeah. Give more. And if I'm unlike, if I have huge pockets, the first thing I will do, I will acquire all the companies in the region.
Yeah.
And then make this big giant company.
Yeah, it's not that hard actually.
Yeah, yeah, it's you need compared to the acquisitions that we are hearing about, it's doable.
Yeah,
that
the talent pool is actually not small, but not big, not a huge.
It's not big.
Yeah,
but it will scale.
Definitely,
it will scale. You know, if we compare this year to last year, the number of people who are interested in getting training at MadHub.
Yeah,
I believe the CVs we received is like 10 times. From last year.
Yeah.
So yeah, but more people are getting into gaming. So if you find like the right people, invest in them. That's one thing. Then bring the experts, as I said before.
I'd like to add to that. Like for example, this is like for the investors, just like you said, that outside the region that they want to invest in the gaming industry in the MENA region, please do a proper due diligence. For example, if there some studios, they are claiming they are the best studios in the region, please do a proper due diligence, because in the gaming industry...
Because MadHub is the best studio in the region.
Yeah, exactly.
No, we didn't say that.
I believe it's very important, because a lot of people, till today, one of the biggest companies in the region, in the gaming business, they're still missing out that they understand the gaming industry, it's all about IPs. If you have the best talent in the world, and you don't have a proper IP, in the eyes of the investor or the acquisition, potential acquisition, because a lot of big exits are happening, okay? And these big companies that acquiring these companies, they already do a good money. So they won't have store domination, which is IPs. If you have a very good IP, you will get an investment, you will get an acquisition. But if you have the most talented team in the world, okay, not just in the MENA, in the world, and you don't have any IPs, you are just generating revenue, I don't think that will cut it in the gaming industry.
Yeah.
So when an investor do proper due diligence, and I don't mean that they can deliver, because definitely they will always be a better team that make a better games. But if you have very good IP with, for example, if I were an investor in the gaming industry, I would choose a mediocre game with a very powerful IP over a very innovative game with a low penetration IP.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically, yeah, I believe the talented team is very important, as well as IPs in the region. By the way, this is actually interesting. I thought about it just now, because when you asked what are missing in the region, in the gaming industry, I think, yeah, the IPs, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what's missing.
Because mostly we're localizing games,
rather than creating an IP, valid IP for the region. If you have an IP dominating region, that would be great.
And that was why I started my studio back
then.
But we couldn't push. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
To create an IP that looks like the region, because we've always watched, you know, Spider-Man or like any Marvel
DC, yeah.
Based in New York and the US.
Yeah.
We rarely, or we haven't even seen a superhero or a nice story from the region, apart from Aladdin and these.
I think there is a bunch of good stories, IPs, but not a gaming IP.
Yeah.
For example, in the entertainment industry, I think we have a bunch of good books as an IP, for example. But
that could be turned into games.
Exactly.
And movies.
Exactly.
To actually
export culture. A novel turned into a game, which is already proven outside.
Yeah.
Like, for example, a bunch of games like Witcher 3 and...
Witcher.
It's actually works, but we need to tear road it to the MENA region in some way.
And now you know more about the culture of where that IP came from.
Yeah.
So we need IPs that can actually export culture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The positive culture.
And in order to do that, you need a very talented team. So basically, you need all of the aspects together.
Even Western studios are using our culture in order to create games. Like if you look at Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
The first Assassin's Creed was based in the Arab world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, that's interesting, because as I said, the outside region seeing us as consumers. A gaming consumers.
Yeah, exactly.
So it makes it go back and forth about this topic.
Where would you see gaming in the MENA region, like in the next, I would say, 3 years or 5 years? And Brahim, since you have a knack for understanding what's coming next, where would you see gaming in general, not in the region, like where would you see gaming in the MENA region going forward in the next 5 years, and where would you see the market going forward?
Okay,
in the next 5 years.
That for me, it's a very wild hunt. Okay, that I believe the ads industry is going to take a big hit over the upcoming years.
A bigger head than it could.
Yeah. Because let's say, for example, if you look at the traction of like the big players in the market, what they are doing, somehow they are forcing a bit by bit the subscription model in the gaming industry. It started in the console, but again, in the console, you have a lot of just playing the game. You have a multiplayer access.
More commitment.
But in mobile, it's purely what you subscribe, you can play these games. For example, Apple Arcade.
Yeah,
and the one service that Google has, I forget its name, but if you see all of the way, they are forcing a bit by bit the subscription model, the grossing in-app purchase game, because they are making it easier to launch an in-app purchase game, because again,
the stores are doing it.
Yeah, exactly, Apple or Google, but they are undermining, let's say Google is aside from that talk, but Apple, they are a bit undermining the ads industry, because if you look from 2016 till now, when the major app store change kicks in, in 2016 maybe or 17, I'm not sure, that they undermined like big time the app store optimization if you have an ads-based game. Yeah. Like for example, if you open the app store right now, you will see the today page is highlighting a story around an in-app purchase game.
Yeah, of course.
The second tab is like highlighting and promoting the in-app purchase inside that game.
So they succeeded in doing that.
Exactly.
Now the games that are
at
pushed,
what cost? Yeah, exactly. But at what cost?
Premiums.
They are undermining the ads industry and running games. So I believe if you want to place your bets, I believe, let's say for example, you develop a game that is hybrid model, for example, between ads and in-app purchase. Not only in-app purchase, because it's tough to compete there, and as well not as just a hyper-casual game.
Because the LTV will be very low if you depend on that one.
Because the
no longer makes sense.
Anyway. Yeah, exactly. So if you do a game, a hybrid between the in-app purchase and ads-based game, that would be good. And leave a room, it might be get a huge change that the subscription model will be forced among the mobile gaming. Let's say, for example, for the next 5 years, I'm not sure.
Maybe battle passes or...
Exactly. The subscription model is going to be tough. Because just like Netflix and Spotify, so when they came out, just like
there will be competition.
Exactly. Yeah. By the way, each company, I think tech company, that's just my opinion. I think they hate that the user owning the thing, the tech, the game, the IP, the title, the song, the show, the movie. They don't want the user owning this because it gives them more control on how you consume this product.
Yeah.
So I believe it's nothing different than the gaming industry in mobile.
And if you look at other industries, we all had like TVs at home and we watch like...
with ads.
Yes, movies with ads. And now no one is... My father and mother still watch these.
And having a landline, of course, as well.
now we are more comfortable with subscription
on
model,
demand,
which unfortunately also reduced the quality of movies and the series that we are seeing.
Because they have to provide continuous value, and that's super expensive.
Which is a problem, but I agree, it will all eventually hit like the mobile games, console games, and everything. But there is something that I also believe is that they always said to us, like, mobile is the future, console games will disappear, PC games will disappear. But the idea is console gamers and PC gamers were there before mobile. You can call like mobile gamers on like maybe non-consumers, while like the real consumers are light gamers, and the real gamers will always stay on mobile and console.
And they are really tough to impress.
Always be interested in buying the game.
Mm.
While the subscription model will bring the light gamers to consoles and other places. So the focus should be like to do both maybe. So either like have a paid game with like multiple thousand sales and ads, now ads in the future subscription model, a game that have millions of users where the store owners will pay you peanuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, ironically, Netflix brought back ads.
Yeah. And yeah. They have games as well.
Yeah, as well. It's interesting to look at the movie industry and see where we might go next.
We'll pay subscription and watch ads.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Or you pay premium subscription.
I think that's because the bubble happened in COVID. They exaggerated and overestimated their potential. And when the market, let's say, for example, what's the word? Like clamped to what its original before COVID. They understood that we messed up in that area, so they want to squeeze every profit they possibly can in any service.
Keep on growing.
Exactly. Whether it's ads, for example, in the Netflix you mentioned, ads, games. Netflix, they will never.
But the idea is like, let's say if you look at gaming or at Netflix, at the number of TV shows or the number of movies in the world or the number of games in the world are huge already.
Yeah.
So if I pay a subscription to play all these old games, it's okay. But
yeah,
don't
for each game,
or to watch movies, for example. But don't give me like a zillion bad movies. Give me like two movies in a year, plus the huge library that is already there. But give me quality movies.
So content IP, strong IP.
Yeah. By the way, interesting thing that I don't want to drive away from the subject, but the only service that's actually doing that, which I know of, because I watched it several times.
Apple TV.
TV Plus, yeah. TV Plus is very...
But you don't have the other side, which is the huge...
Library, content. No. But that's, I think, their selling point, because we don't have a lot of shows. Maybe if you like binged all of our shows, like in 1 month we are finished, but every show they are award winning or nominated.
Yeah.
Unlike other services, they just do rubbish and just overwhelm the user with the content.
Yeah. Where would you see the region moving forward as a gaming? Gaming in the region, I would say.
I think like the number of studios, maybe in 5 years, it will like triple.
Yeah, minimum. I agree.
We will have like multiple success
stories.
The one thing that we will see and I would love to see is that we will start seeing AA games on PC and console. That's going to be very interesting. And we will see like a move from ad-based games to into an Apex game.
Yeah.
Nice. And potentially penetrate like big markets outside the region.
By the way, the ads industry, I think it won't go away at the end of the day because Apple also benefits from the ads. Yeah, exactly. And they want to market the grossing game that Apple loves. Also, they will market it through these channels again.
Yeah.
So it's a two-way street. But I think it won't go away, but it will be drastically. It will get a very tough business.
Yeah.
If you want to survive in the ads industry, it will be very tough.
Yeah.
On a selected top publishers, for example. Like, for example, one of the biggest publishers, they said to us when we launched Rooftop, when Apple made a move around the privacy policy, I was panicking. We told them
talking to multiple publishers. They all said they were not worried about it.
No worry about that. Boom, 2 years later, when none of them on the top charts. Also, in fact, some of them are investing in the grossing games.
Yeah.
So, basically... You need to know what's in it for me, just like you said. As a big tech company, so I can control the market. I control the market share for each, let's say, business model in the gaming industry in terms of App Store. So if you want to succeed or at least safely place your bets, you need to understand where is the market's going, given these big giants, what they need.
It's in
it. Yeah, exactly.
What's the next step for Madhok? What are you guys working on? What's soon to be launched?
So basically, we are scaling our console title, Highway Drifter, and we are working on another title, which is going to be multiplayer. And we will focus more on like AA paid games.
Mm-hmm.
And we are working on like a couple of projects that are focused more on in-app patches than ads. So the main target is like to create games that has higher LTVs.
But by the way, I would like to mention one more thing. I was saying to Hazem the other day that I believe this period of time, the gaming industry, it's the golden age or golden era for indies. Triple A are struggling. Because Triple A, what's happening is they have a lot of big budgets, running costs, because they have experienced teams like 200, 300 plus, 500, in some cases 1,000, like for example, three studios, for example, working a big title. They have a big running cost, so in order to justify that in front of the investor,
yeah,
and to make a profit out of it, they need to make the games very expensive. They want to introduce more microtransactions with the hardcore gamer they really hate. And it will be like tough market to monetize from, given your big budgets, and you are not pleasing the hardcore gamer that's a big fan of that title. However, the indies,
they can afford to
exactly, and they are very connected to the gamer because they are not a 500 employee. They are like 10, 20 people, okay? Most likely, they will talk to the CEO directly. So they are happy to help. They are happy to tailor the game, given the user feedback. So I believe now, right now, okay, is the best opportunity, exactly, for indies, just like Madoc.
Right.
I believe they will have a big opportunity. For example, Helldivers.
Helldivers, I could say
medium size.
For example, there's another game on Steam now. It's doing very well.
I think there's a bunch of, like, Fall Guys maybe. 50 guys. I think they were 50 employees. I wouldn't consider them AAA, but actually it worked because it's more friendly to the user. I mean, this is the right time for the indies to make a good product and to get connected with the hardcore gamer.
Yeah.
If you are developing on PC and console.
Yeah. Interesting. Nice. For people that are watching us, where could they follow your work?
Follow our work?
Yeah.
Like,
okay. Maybe you personally or Madhook.
So basically, they can check our Instagram account.
It's website, very Instagram, PlayStation Store, App Store,
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Just type Madhook. And the search bar on Google, and they will find.
Remember the name, guys.
Yeah.
Hazem, Brahim, it was really nice having you. It was a super interesting conversation. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ziyab. It was a pleasant podcast, actually. It was a pleasant talk.
Always happy to talk to you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you very much.